Yes, sir. And you're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
It's Monday morning. My name is Keith Brown Eel. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio. On today's edition, host Jessica Thomas talks with Dean Becker of the Drug Truth Network and producer of the 420 Drug War News you hear after our show. We will open up the phone lines for your questions and comments later in the show. Get those pencils and pads ready for our calendar of events in the middle of the show, and as always, the 420 Drug War News after the show. And now here's Jessica and her guest, Dean Becker.
Good morning. You are tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. I'm your host, Jessica Thomas, on today's edition of Jaws of Justice Radio. We interview Dean Becker, and Dean has hosted more than 1,000 Pacifica radio programs and is host of the Unvarnished Truth television program. The people who use substances prohibited 100 years ago by charlatans, moralists, and profiteers. The drug war is ending. It's a slow, ugly, and bloody, but it's ending. Politicians are walking away from this policy on a daily basis. The media has begun to open their eyes to the horrors we inflict on ourselves via drug prohibition, and the public is beginning to rise up against this war, the war on we the people. It's Dean joining me on the line this morning from Houston. Good morning, Dean.
Good morning, Jessica. It feels like I'm at home, and the same number, 90.1 FM, same as I do here in Houston on KPFT, and you guys follow Democracy Now! What a wonderful place to have a show.
It is, indeed, because it brings up a heightened sense of the issues that are going on. Amy's really good at bringing things to our consciousness.
Yes, I appreciate this opportunity. As you say, I've done well over 1,000 radio shows in this regard, trying to educate and motivate people to realize this drug war has no end. It has no need to exist, and we need to end it. We need to better protect our children from the horrors of drug war.
And you don't really well protect your children when they're, if you're a, you know, someone that needs a medical cannabis or any other substance user, and jackbooted thugs come kicking the door down in the middle of the night.
Right,
Which leads to a lot of unnecessary deaths.
I use that, facetious bumper on my show. Kicking in the door, kicking in the door, we shall bring salvation. Kicking in the door. And the fact of the matter is, the drug war has never protected our children. It has never protected our nation. It is a trap. It is a means whereby certain people make a lot of money and control the rest of us.
Some people refer to this as the new plantation.
Well, yes, it has a lot of similarities to the old Jim Crow situation, where we have a lot of people, a lot of black and Hispanic people, being sent to prison for minor amounts of drugs, and there they get, quote, jobs, making 6 cents an hour, making knickknacks for the prison guards union. It's such an ugly situation, and people think it's, because it's been around for 100 years, since the Harrison Narcotics Act, that it must be valid. But the fact is, it has never done anything that it was purported to do.
I woke up one morning and it was almost like a slap in the face that I realized that just about everything that I was taught was a lie, especially when it comes to Western medicine, that we were basically unplugged from our source, and that, personally, I view the plant as an equal and opposite reaction to a lot of the horror that's going on in our world right now and a chance to heal a nation. But it's not just the plant that we're talking about. We're talking about recreational drug users that fall into these categories where they're going to be arrested, fingerprinted, and basically any hope for the future is taken.
Yes, no longer able to vote, use government housing, get an education, credit, job. Little wonder that the black market in drugs is the only organization hiring. It is a sad situation that we, America, land of second chances, is hardly the land of first chances anymore. We've been duped by those with money and power.
There's a book that came out very early on called The Emperor Wears No Clothes.
Jack Herer, you betcha.
Mm-hmm. And he was pretty on track at talking about the corporate involvement in the illegally, the prohibition of cannabis that started this war on drugs.
Right. It was what accelerated. It's what spread the hysteria, the propaganda, the fear. they try to convince people that this product that they had been using all their lives, that mankind had been using for thousands of years, the cannabis plant, which they made elixirs and lotions and all kinds of things from. But they were scared by the thought of this new, quote, drug from Mexico, down south, marijuana. And people said, well, yeah, that sounds like bad stuff. Well, I'll go along to protect the children, little realizing that it was the very same drug they were buying on the grocery shelf called cannabis. And it's a big, well, I'm not going to say joke, but it's a big situation where we've been fooled.
Is there availability of, you know, I imagine there is because this is all on the record, but of how many people, you know, when they voted to prohibit the substance, really actually knew what they were voting for?
Well, that's the real ironic part of it. When these bills came through the U.S. Congress, they were rather confused. There was one of the congressmen talked about, I think it's some kind of narcotic. They said that the American Medical Association was in favor of this new law, when the fact of the matter is the American Medical Association had come before Congress to protest this law and to say they saw no reason why it should be passed. So it's a lie. It's been a lie. It will remain a lie until we end these stupid laws.
And there's people like you and I and all the activists that are trying actively to get the truth out there as more and more people fall ill and see that Western medicine isn't working for them. They're returning to the ground and the earth. They're finding that the cannabis does relieve a lot of these symptoms and cure most of these diseases.
Well, you see the reports that Dr. Sanjay Gupta has put out, you know, about weed and showing the little girls and the little children that are suffering hundreds of seizures per day, and then they try some of the CBD oil or even just a straight-out marijuana extract, and the number of episodes disappears. Well, it doesn't disappear. From 300 a day, it might diminish to one or two per day or just a few per week, which allows the brain to relax, which allows them to learn or relearn how to walk and talk and communicate with their parents. And anybody who sees that and who still continues to believe in drug war, who believes that this marijuana should remain illegal, I truly believe they're evil or at best wholly ignorant.
I understand. You know, really, our colleges don't teach the endocannabinoid system, which was rediscovered in 94, I do believe, but my date's on that. But it's not taught in medical schools.
And
someone has to really defend, this is what I paid for my education. They can't be wrong.
We have been duped. I mean, that's one of the first lines in my book, is that we have been duped. And we have allowed profiteers to take control of our educational system, of our medical learning. And we've allowed this to develop over the years because it was designed to protect the few, to protect the innocent, to protect the children. And as I stated, the drug war has never done anything to protect our children. It now is set up where it entices them to join in the black market, to make a little bit of dollars by selling drugs to their fellow students. The best place to buy drugs in America, high schools. Second best, junior highs. Third best are prisons. We had a series of busts here in Houston just over the last month where jailers have been caught sneaking drugs and other products into the jails to make a few extra bucks. It is an enticement. It is a creator of crime.
As a creator of crime, but it's also a creator of a small industry that's within itself that keeps some people afloat. You know, I mean, it's sad but true. And we look at, you know, where our attorney general is making some recommendations, or at least has acknowledged that there's sentencing issues that needs to be severe sentencing reform. There's a gentleman from Harrisonville sitting in prison for life for his third strikeout, this time selling to an undercover officer 5 pounds of marijuana, but he's serving time alongside a former police officer that molested dozens of children that will get out in 20 years. It's
right.
A pretty sad state of what we're at. But with the looking at the sentencing reform, they are taking it in small doses, which actually, or as you stated in your book, incrementalism is a killer.
Well, it took us 100 years from December 17, 1914, with the passage of the Harrison Narcotics Act to get to this point in time here. And luckily, we're starting to realize, to unwind the mechanism of drug war. But my thought, my hope, is that we don't take another 100 years to undo this, to undo the drug laws themselves. I want to share a thought with you. I wrote a letter back earlier this month. I sent it to Barack Obama, Attorney General Holder, Senate Majority Minority Leaders, House Majority Minority Leaders, and our Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts. And the first line of the letter I sent to them, along with my book, was, "I write this day to beseech you to reconsider our nation's addiction to drug war." And it goes on to talk about, you know, the slow, ugly, bloody nature of this drug war and how they should do their part to do something about it. And just, Friday, I got a letter, U.S. Department of Justice, Drug Enforcement Administration, addressed to me. It's a brief letter. I'll read it to you.
Mm-hmm.
"Dear Mr. Becker, Attorney General Eric Holder asked me to thank you for sending him a copy of your book, To End the War on Drugs, A Guide for Politicians, the Press, and Public. He thought the Drug Enforcement Administration might find the book an interesting read, so he has shared it with us. Thank you for sharing this publication with us. Sincerely, Gary R. Owen, Acting Chief, Office of Congressional and Public Affairs." And some within reform have told me that I better watch it when I open the door. I think, no, from what I've heard and seen from Eric Holder, he understands this problem. He's spoken rather boldly about the need for change over the past, 6, 8, 10 months. And I think the end is, you know, like a glimpse of light at the end of the tunnel. It is there. It's waiting for us to march towards us. It's waiting for us to encourage and motivate these politicians to stand for truth. And I think we have this opportunity, and we'd best not blow it.
With the truth comes the fact that finances fund this war. It really does. The police departments are getting all this. There's militarization going on of police departments, with the drug war being the reason why. You know, saying that, this is equipment they need because the criminals are better equipped, and I can't see where a county would need, you know, Range Rovers and Humvees and 50 caliber guns to use on the citizens. People are, you know, stressed out about them having, they have control of nuclear weapons, not our local government. But I'm just saying, our government has control of nuclear weapons, yet they're afraid if somebody has a gun that could contain more than 30 rounds.
Right. And we have all of these surplus equipment coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan that they have to find a place to use it to justify the cost of the thing, I suppose. And they are giving it to counties and cities around the country that, get them a Humvee or anti-personnel carrier or whatever them vehicles are, mounted with machine guns and SWAT teams, 150 SWAT raids a day across this country, whereas it used to be when they first instituted SWAT teams, it was, you know, one or two per year. It has become a means whereby they bust poker games and other places with, fully armed SWAT teams. Just to justify the equipment, the expense, the personnel, we have been duped. And there's just so much wrong with the drug war that the public is beginning to recognize, is beginning to realize we have to do something about it, because we are slipping into this abyss that if we go much further, we may not be able to climb back out of.
Well, definitely not. I mean, because it falls, and people get real aware when their family gets involved, when a grandmother has to raise their grandchildren because their children are incarcerated or have the children taken away from them, and then this, without a judge, jury, being arrested or tried because of the drug, get involved in this drug court, they take the kids, and then on the record goes a permanent mark that will keep them from ever working with children or getting their children back or working in nursing. All of this without being arrested, charged, or having representation. This happens in family court. That brings up a whole another set of issues where kids are being brought in, and of course then there's more people that work with each child, like a psychiatrist, and then they start with medications, and the more that people that they bring on, the more the paycheck comes in. Some kids have 6, 7, maybe even 8 caseworkers you know, guardian ad litem, a psychiatrist, a social worker. There's a whole host of people that this kid employs. Then a whole team of people meet and take this power out of the parents' hands.
Well, we have too many of those situations where, right, for a bad urine test or, I don't know, trace amounts of drugs or just the thought that, you know, the neighbors are concerned and the police get involved and they take the kids, they put them in foster homes, and too often those foster homes really don't care about those children. They just care about the paycheck that comes with keeping them. We had a horrible situation a few months back here where a gentleman got caught with some marijuana. They took his child. They gave it to a foster home, and the foster mother killed the baby. And to protect the child from marijuana, they gave the child to, well, truthfully, a murdering foster parent. We have to get over the paranoia, the hysteria. We've got to get down to the heart of this matter. And as it's said a million times, marijuana has never killed anybody. It has never been a direct threat to the children. As I feel that if parents use a little cannabis to, at the end of the day, to relax, unwind, and if they're not smoking it in front of the children or influencing them in some fashion, it should be no concern of government or anybody.
Well, it's the same as with them having a beer in front of the kids or pouring themselves cocktails in front of the kids. Should they be allowed to do that as well?
Right. And then you hear the objections, oh, we don't want to allow them to advertise weed to influence the children. Well, good Lord, as I said earlier, the schools are the place, the number one sales outlet for drugs to our kids. We have to get over that paranoia. It's fear of the unknown. Fear gives the drug war life. Without the fear, we would recognize the utter futility of continuing down this same path.
My daughter herself told me that when she was going to school and they try to make the officer friendly that's in their school around them and DARE, you know, the DARE program. She said learned how to use drugs from the DARE program and all about it. And whereas, you know, we've always been really open with her. And this was years ago. And this, you know, pretty much the DARE program is a fail.
Well, sure. And I'd like to, Jessica, point out again that this book talks about that fear. It talks about solutions, talks about the reality of this. I mean, we've got chapters featuring judges and cops, doctors and medical cannabis experts. We've got a good friend of, I think, of yours, Mr. Eben Thampe.
Oh, yeah.
He's in this book talking about money for nothing, you know, the asset forfeiture situation and how we set people up on the highways, pull them over for, quote, improper lane change or whatever. Convince them that we have, the cops convince the people they have the authority to dig through their trunk and under their seats and looking for that elusive drug bust, when really what they're looking for is money. Because if they can find a stack of money in your car, well, they're going to take it, telling you that, well, the only way you're going down the road is if you sign this release form. And, you know, that money mounts up. It's billions of dollars now per year being taken from Joe and Jolene Citizen because of the, quote, fear of drugs.
Those roadside stops, you know, being really very unconstitutional, but it seems like our Constitution is standing on pretty thin legs these days that our president and the Congress has taken away a lot of rights that we should have, wireless tapping or you know, NSA, for instance.
Sure. Well, I've talked about many times that the war of terror, and, you know, a lot of folks say the war on terror, but no, it's a war of terror. There's terror inflicted on both sides of this, quite obviously. But the war of terror is the war on drugs with afterburners. After 9/11, they took the mechanism of drug war and immediately applied it to the war of terror, and then extrapolated and expanded it in the war of terror side, and then brought it back to the war on drugs side to further ratchet up the mechanisms and the means to go after our thoughts, our money, pretending to go after drugs.
I just got a note that says when we are ready to start taking calls, we can announce. And we're going to do that in about 5 minutes.
Well, fine. I look forward to that. And, you know, I speak regularly for my band of brothers, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. And just last week I attended a Students for Sensible Drug Policy gathering at a local college. And it was amazing the the questions that come forward are getting more professional or more educated, if you will, that people all across the country, heck, all around the world, are beginning to recognize or take a good look at the mechanism of drug war and are starting to form very profound opinions in that regard. And I think it's an opportunity to quell the fear of those because, as I say, fear gives the drug war life. If you get past the fear and look at the data, the information, the history, you begin to realize that there's no legitimacy to it. It needs to be undone.
And police are very, I mean, I know things have really shifted to where people are reluctant to call the police for help because they are no help. Someone goes to jail if someone calls for help, and it's usually the victim or someone in their family. Say if there's a murder, I know like in our area we have a little bit of restorative justice where they'll have someone from the restorative justice on the scene of the murder to try to assist the family because a lot of time there's that they want to retaliate against or they'll know who it was, but be unwilling to speak with police because to them and just about everybody, the police can't be trusted. They're good. And I saw a great, it was really funny, it was how not to get your butt kicked. That wasn't the word, but how not to get your butt kicked by the police that a comedian had done. And it was funny, but it really isn't funny because it was true. You know, don't drive wearing your hat a certain way. Don't have certain items in your car. Don't talk back. Stay in your car. Keep your hands. But even that can't protect you. And it's got the fear is of the police. They have done that themselves. They've proven that they are violent. They harm people. And more people have been murdered by police in the United States than have been hurt by terrorists.
Well, and there you go. That's the heart of the matter is that, again, we have this mechanism in place. I mean, the airports, my gosh, what a joke these days. But the police have been given this largesse to circumvent, to walk around the Constitution because of necessity, you know, drugs, terror, whatever. And people just buy into it because of fear. And we have to stop and think about what does all this really mean? Are we that much in peril because of drugs? They've been around, well, since mankind started writing things down.
Right.
And yet the hysteria just keeps pulsing out through the media, through the Congress, through, well, not the president so much. I think I'm beginning to think that Obama and Holder get it. They are in a conundrum where it's hard to fight, quote, City Hall or you know, mechanisms of government that have been in place for so long.
Well, then City Hall makes the agreement when they bring in a new private prison that they will fill those prisons. They sign an agreement saying, you build here, we'll fill it.
A classic example right here in Houston. Mm-hmm. In the last couple of years, they've had jail overcrowding. It was unconstitutionally. They were shipping people to Louisiana because they just didn't have room. And so they had a vote last November for building another jail. And it passed. And the fact of the matter is we have a law here in Texas that says you no longer have to arrest or jail anybody for under 4 ounces of marijuana. And yet the district attorney, the sheriff, and the police, she say, no, 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 we're going to use the old law. And they continue to arrest every year over 10,000 people for under 4 ounces of marijuana, just in this city alone, which then leads to the jail overcrowding, which then led to the need to build a new jail. It's a scam, flim-flam, has no basis in reality. It's a pipe dream.
On that note, Dean, I want to let all our listeners know that you're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. We're speaking with author and activist Dean Becker.
And now the calendar of events for March 31st. On Saturday, April 5th, Representative Brandon Ellington will be holding 2 town hall meetings so Kansas City and Independence residents can attend close to home. The Kansas City Town Hall will be at the Zion Grove Baptist Church, 2801 Swope Parkway, Kansas City, Missouri, from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. The Independence Town Hall will be at the Maywood Baptist Church, 10505 East Winter Road, Independence, Missouri, from 3:30 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. Advocates and citizens that wants to know about hearings and legislation that pertains to the Criminal Justice Code, law enforcement, prisons, and reentry can join Representative Ellington Saturday, April 5th, 11:30 a.m. to 12:45 p.m. at the Brush Creek Community Center, 3801 Emmanuel Cleaver Boulevard, Kansas City, Missouri. The Criminal Justice Task Force will be joining Missouri Association for Social Welfare in a lobby day at Jefferson City Wednesday on April the 9th. They will be lobbying senators and representatives on legislation for sentencing reform, food stamps for formerly incarcerated citizens, and more. They will be meeting at the Capitol in the hearing room 2 at 10:30 a.m. on Wednesday, April the 9th. For more information on carpooling, contact Robin Johnson at 816-522-4081 or 816-468-7894 or email redrob2655@yahoo.com. My name is Keith Brown here, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org.
Welcome back, and you're tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. We're speaking with author Dean Becker on his newly released book, To End the War on Drugs, A Guide for Politicians, the Press, and Public. And we're going to take some phone calls. Good morning, caller. Would you like to be on the air?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I have cystic fibrosis. I'm 33 years old, and I have unheardedly high lung function for my age. I was just in the hospital last week, and I've been able to maintain an FEV1 of 77%.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe this is because, not that I knew something when I was younger, but I started smoking marijuana. And then as I aged and, you know, decided I needed to grow up and quit, I found that I quickly grew sick in the symptoms of cystic fibrosis. They manifested and, you know, accelerated the decline in my lung function. So
mm-hmm.
I found that marijuana seems to help with my lung function.
It's an expectorant.
I think it has to do with the change of the lipophilicity of the mucus.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and there could be something there with the you know, the different essential oils and antimicrobial products out there.
Now, as Dean will tell you, that until we get this rescheduled or off of the scheduling, we won't be able to do the research that we need, but we're hopeful.
Yeah. Well, I found some patents, and the U.S. Department of Health holds all the rights due to patent to marijuana.
The same that makes it illegal.
Well, I mean, they're different government agencies, but I've also found, you know, patents dealing with the changes of the lipophilicity of THC, which is very nonpolar, and when it attaches to the mucus, it changes the properties. If that makes sense to you. So.
It makes complete sense to me.
Well, I'd like to jump in here with the thought that this is another example. As you said, Jessica, the research has not been done. For 100 years, they've quashed that research. It's beginning to be permitted on an occasional basis. But the fact of the matter is, sir, with your cystic fibrosis and other maladies, it's not an unusual occurrence for cannabis to have benefit. It's not just for kids with epileptic fits or whatever. It has many healing properties. Dr. Robert Melamed has talked about this, the endocannabinoid system, how every organ in our body has endocannabinoid receptors, and how the attachment of the cannabinoid molecules from smoking or ingesting cannabis can fulfill that loop, can stop the problem, can begin to benefit the person, improve their health. And it's so sad. It's from my perspective, again, a great evil that we have denied this research, that we have not allowed the information to be gathered and put to good use. And the fact that, sir, you do find benefit is not at all unusual for your malady or for hundreds of maladies that people benefit from the use of cannabis.
Interestingly enough, there's a very high concentration of the cannabinoid receptors in the large intestine, which also has roles in immune function.
Right. There are a lot of people with the, what is it, irritable bowel syndrome and other types of problems like that, that are able to eliminate the distress, the complications from that, and lead a more productive life through the use of cannabis.
I've also been prescribed Marinol, and it helps quite a bit with nausea and whatever other effects it has. And on my body, it seems to help quite a bit.
It'll keep you safe if you ever have to pee for the man, too, because you've got a prescription then.
Yes,
right. No, it's a good point, Jessica. I actually had a prescription for Marinol back many years ago now, 10, 12. And I found it useful, but not as comprehensive, I guess, if you will, as the actual cannabis plant. It was just one molecule. Whereas the cannabis plant has, I hear, over 400 component parts, the terpenes and the hydrocannabinoids and the cannabinol and the THC, two or three kinds of THC. So.
Right. Yeah, I had a Stanford organic chemistry PhD program, and my professor was very adamant about never discounting the unknown, because it's very hard to get something very pure. And how do, you know, he would always go back to the anti-cancer drugs, and he's like, well, we know that the process associated to make this chemical 99.998% pure cures cancer, but we don't know what that 0.002% or impurity is, and we don't. Because we don't know what it is, we don't know what impact it has on the body.
Well, we do know that now that chemo radiation is 97.9% ineffective. So, whose 2% do we rather take the side of?
Yeah,
it should be allowed to be our personal choice.
Well, too often, the chemotherapy treatments are detrimental to overall health. And take you to a low point from which you hope to rebound. And as you say, its effectiveness is rather small.
I think there are advances in medicine coming with, you know, targeted chemotherapy and different nanotechnologies that are emerging and slowly getting approved so they can target it a little bit better. But it's still, you know, you're stopping living tissue, because the idea is, you know, cancer is the thing that's growing the fastest in the body, so you just stop everything growing.
Cannabis works on a system called of apoptosis, which causes basically cell death of the cancer cells and not any healthy cells.
Right.
Yes.
And if you look on the government's website and, you know, loosely search cancer and cannabis or any other disease, just loosely search it, it will tell you that.
They also work on another thing. I think it's called angiothresis, and that they can also alter the growth of new blood vessels, because the theory is the only thing growing new blood vessels in the body when you have cancer is tumors.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a very promising drug failed the FDA validation trials because it wasn't manufacturable. Turned into a big gumball in the equipment.
Oh, you mean the THC?
No, this was an anti-cancer drug that I worked on as a pharmaceutical chemist.
Right. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story with us, caller.
No problem. I was hoping to, you know, get...
We've got another
caller. Let some people know. Okay, thanks.
Thank you so much for sharing with us. We really appreciate it. We have another caller. Caller, can you get to us, sir? Oh, no, he's not there yet. I'm sorry. It's all right. But, you know, where we're at...
Jessica, could I throw in a thought here for
the
gentleman
please.
Who called in and for other callers? The truth that he knows the truth that you were reflecting there, Jessica, the truth that all of us know about this is known by our politicians, is known by the newspaper editors, is known by the broadcasters.
Either that or they're pretty darn stupid if they don't. I mean, and then we've got to think about who elected in there.
Well, but let me finish the point, and that is they're waiting on you and me and that caller and his friends and associates to tell them that we know. They're waiting for the feeling that the majority are in favor of change. And what we have to do is contact them. A phone call is good, email's good, a written letter is better, but what's best is to go to their office, to sit down with them, to tell them this truth, that you know it, your friends and your family know it, and that it is time for change, because they know this truth. They're just waiting for our permission to make the change, for our approval, to give them that feeling of comfort that it's okay to make this move, and we must make those contacts.
We have another caller, Dean. Caller, are you with us?
Yeah, it's Vine Guy from the Villa Incognito in Midtown. How are you guys?
Oh, we're great. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks. Okay, a couple quick stories. Oh, remember, 75% of the rattlesnake bites in this country involve alcohol. No report the snake was drinking. Anyway, I met with some people from the VA on March 16th, 2010, and I talked to some blind veterans and that stuff, and that person that was high up in blind services for the VA. That July, the VA ruled that they would write the prescriptions in the states where they have medical marijuana. Doctors are hesitant, like in Michigan, because of the Schedule I proposition, and I said the veterans had to demand it. You have medical marijuana in Hawaii. When you're prescribed that, they give you six seeds. I was just talking to a county prosecutor that I'm friends of, and he just lost a case of 55 pounds, a jury trial. The juries aren't interested in convicting. Now, he wasn't able to introduce the guns and the violence into the court. And Keesley and I, it's like we rehearsed the line together. We saying, well, why wasn't he, why did those things involve? Because it's illegal. So, yeah, I mean, Barack Obama said he can't do it alone. So, yeah, we've got to keep on him to make progress in this. And there is research being done in countries like Israel and various things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We've been
Dr. Melamede as well in Colorado is
yeah,
doing some great
and
trials.
This news story was only once on NPR about 3 years ago, so there's a lot of truth to it. The beer and spirit people didn't like it. It cost the government $2 for every alcoholic drink sold. Now, I'm not calling for prohibition. And somebody would say, well, how can that be? I said, you take a drunk driver that slams into somebody and puts them in a wheelchair, they're on Medicaid, Social Security, and Medicare. I rest my case. And, you know, it's like we've got to have common sense, and you're right. The prison population is just, you know, when you have 80 to 90% of the people there for nonviolent drug offenses and that stuff, we've got to come to a total different prohibition on everything. Because, yeah, any politician that says they keep drugs out of a community when you can get them in a prison, you know, is telling a bunch of lies. So, hey, peace out.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for that. What we really need is momentum. What we need is the chance to share this truth with our elected officials. And going back to my point, we've got to do our part. You know, I mean, I've written this book. As I said, I sent it to the president, attorney general, chief justice of the United States, and many others, because I want them to know that I know this truth, that this book has the truth, that we, by that I mean elected officials and otherwise, cops, wardens, prosecutors know this truth, that journalists know this truth, that ministers know this truth. And a gentleman was talking about medical cannabis. There's a whole chapter in here. It's titled Hippocratic or Hypocritical, and it features Dr. Donald Abrams, the researcher out in California who's done multiple studies. We've been talking about Dr. Bob Melamede, Mitch Earlywine, Jeffrey Guy, heads up GW Pharmaceuticals, is in this book. Dr. Carl Hart, who's been making a big splash. Todd Micaria, and of course, we've got a section in here from Mr. Michael Krawitz of Veterans for Medical Marijuana, talking about how it benefits, how it helps to undo the post-traumatic stress syndrome for all these soldiers returning from wars. We've got to use common sense and logic to move forward here. We own the moral high ground. We own the science, the medicine. We've got to get over the fear of speaking what we know to be true.
Yeah, these people come, these men or and women, the service women come home, and they've now got faced with PTSD, other debilitating injuries, mental and physical. And then they're open season on them, war on them. I mean, it's just, there's something inherently wrong with a system that will send you off to die for your country and protect the opium fields, because you've got to keep that under control, and then come home, and you're an enemy. Now you're an enemy of the state.
But, and that's the real telling point, is that we have U.S. soldiers guarding the opium fields in Afghanistan to keep them safe. Once that opium is harvested and sold to the Taliban and al-Qaeda, it makes billions of dollars for our terrorist enemies, which they can use to buy weapons to kill the very same U.S. soldiers guarding those opium fields. It is
ridiculous.
Ridiculous, yes.
And I've heard a lot of theories, a lot of comments, but also one from one of the greatest, or currently probably most wanted, drug lords in Mexico. I believe he's still on the loose. But thanking the United States and our president for making him a very wealthy man.
Well, sure. Now, the Chapo Guzman got busted, I guess, a month ago. But he had a good run. He was, for 10 years, a billionaire. Probably had all the women and drugs and party that he wanted. Catch him doesn't mean that the party ends. It just means that someone else will kill his associates, enough of his associates to rise to the top and, play who wants to be a billionaire. It is not going to end until we end this stupidity of drug war.
I know, driving through South Texas like last spring, I saw signs that said, it's not the truth. Nogales is safe. And because there's so much misinformation, people being afraid to cross the border into Mexico just for day shopping, but it's really gotten quite violent with every change of power.
In 2012, the hot summer of 2012, I drove 7,000 miles across this country in the Leap Mobile in support of the Caravan for Peace, Justice, and Dignity, led by Mexican poet Javier Cecilia. And it was about 100 people who had lost loved ones in the Mexican barbarism, and they toured the country. We had 31 cities to educate the people to what's going on in Mexico. Some say 60, some say 80, some say over 100,000 dead, tens of thousands of people missing. And the U.S. press for many years tried to say that was just drug traffickers killing one another, when the fact of the matter is the vast majority of crimes in Mexico, over 95% of these murders, are not solved. They don't know who did it. They don't know why they did it. I've seen the videos of people having their arms and legs chopped off and stacked in piles and heads all lined up on the courthouse steps. It is a statement of power that these traffickers put forward to, again, put fear in the hearts of people. Fear gives the drug war life. Without the fear, it could not exist.
When I first moved from Texas to Missouri, I was moved right next door to a meth head, really my first experience with the whole culture. But coming first into Missouri, it was quite a problem. There was we were known as the meth capital of the world, Missouri. Well, they, the crackdowns on Sudafed and all of these other things brought this down to, small people creating for themselves, I guess you would say. But then it switched the power of the methamphetamine over to the hands of the Mexican cartel, which, what did I hear? There was a ranch that was busted there that had some ton of methamphetamine, and that was just what they caught there. And they're being able to create it cheaper and smuggle it into our country. It's more pure than it ever has been before. And we may have started our own problems, but the Mexican cartel is finishing it up.
Well, and I would submit that most of the problems associated with the meth trade deal with its illegality and kind of a frenzy, if you will, that, people round up the money to get the drugs, and then they get the drugs and bring them home and split them up and share them with friends, and then there's kind of a frenzy to use it up before you got to go to work, or use it up before the weekend, or use it up before your roommate does. It is just a horrible situation that speaks of ignorance, truthfully, because before meth became, quote, the illegal drug, you could buy 10 benzodrine tablets at any Texas truck stop for a dollar. And it was not considered a problem until just they ratcheted up the fear of drugs and put forward the draconian measures which lead people to do desperate things in order to obtain and to get access to their drugs.
Dean, I want to let our listeners know that you're tuned to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City, and that our phone number is 816-931-5534 if you'd like to get in on the discussion. We're talking about To End the War on Drugs, A Guide for Politicians to Press on the Public. I highly recommend the reading. You know, for me, though, when I thought you should do an audiobook. For me, when I sit down with a book, it signals my mind. It's time to chill out and take a nap.
Right.
Not that your book was boring, mind you. Anything but boring.
Well, no. This is some weighty content.
It is. And it's a lot to take in when you think about, well, how could they have pulled this over on us all these years? Are we stupid people?
Well,
there's whole generations of kids coming up that never have known anything but this drug war.
I'll fess up, back in the mid-60s, you could smoke pot in a Dairy Queen here in Texas.
We got a caller.
People didn't care. You know, it was just with the ratcheting up with Nixon's declaration of drug war that it all went to hell.
In a handbasket. We have a caller. Caller, would you like to join us on air?
I would.
Awesome.
Hey, good morning. How you guys doing?
Great.
Good morning.
Hey, listen, I don't really want to speak to the drug part of it per se, but more to the police action and the violence part of it. I'm not a drug user, never have been, but what I recognize, just like the war on terror, is the wastefulness of the money allocated and the economic downturn that we found ourselves in this country. We're basically... the country is broke, and there's no doubt about it, and we just keep plugging along because the Federal Reserve is printing money. Excuse me, my allergies are going nuts today, but anyhow, the police, there is a huge rise to militarize the police now. They are no longer there to protect and serve. There was a Supreme Court ruling where in New York City, the police watched a man being attacked by a killer, and they knew the guy was a killer because they had been chasing him through the city streets. And the police hid behind a door on the subway, and they watched this man being attacked by this killer, and they did nothing until the victim was able to knock the attacker down. And finally, they stepped out. And they apprehended him, and they took all the credit, and they gave none to the victim. But it was the victim who took down the killer himself. The duty long enough for the police to step in. But there's been other cases where the police are not there to protect and serve. I come from an aviation career where I deal with the government all the time, with the FAA, and a lot of oversight. And even on that department, you see they're inspectors, FAA inspectors, but they treat themselves as investigators. And I have seen corruption on that level. So I'm just amazed. And Dean, what you're doing and you guys talking on this radio show today, getting the word out, and I think the best thing to do is to keep doing what you're doing, get the word out. And the second thing that people need to do is to start complaining, because the police all the time will violate your rights. Now, I've gone through a divorce, and I'm having difficulty seeing my own children. I gave up an airline career to be a stay-at-home dad with preemie kids, and I did a fantastic job. I didn't think that I could. I'd never been even babysat before, but it turns out I'm a pretty good dad. My kids have the number one math scores in their class on the Kansas State Assessment test because of the work that I've done with them. I'm a very proud father here.
Awesome.
But even with all of that, even with the history of you know, being a captain of a big jet, raising wonderful little girls, I'm still having problems seeing my kids. And when I'm the type of person that I will stand up for my rights. And when you do that, you have interactions with the police often. And my rights are violated all the time. And because of that, and I guess this is the silver lining, I've had to go out and learn what my constitutional rights are. And I'm a little bit ashamed to admit this. We all walk around going, well, yeah, we know what our rights are, but we really don't. Not until you sit down and take a course or open a book and learn those rights. And because of that, it has given me the confidence to stand up to the police when they want to check my identification, when they want to search my car, when they, you know, and everything is geared towards drugs and money, just like Dean is saying, you know, because they want to make the big bust. Well, you know, this is just a dad fighting for his rights to see his kids. There's no drugs or big amounts of money in my car, but they violate my rights all the time, or they try to.
Well, sure. So, and this is just an example of overreach or, I don't know, lack of oversight or something, but we have cops that are trained to not necessarily protect and serve, but to profit from their job. Jessica and I were talking about, you know, the roadside stops and the asset forfeiture and all that, but it goes beyond that. It's the drug war has been used as a mechanism to frighten us. That's truly what it's all about. And it's knock at the door or knock on your car window, sir, roll down the window. Yeah, we want to search your vehicle. Well, I don't want you to. And, you know, well, they say, well, you wouldn't mind just a quick search, would you? And they try to convince you that it's their right. Did I hear something?
Yeah, that was me, Dean. We're getting really close to the end, so I've got to wrap it up here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We burnt through 55 minutes already.
If you don't mind, let me get one more word in, and I'll let you guys go.
Okay.
Hey, so there's even the police departments are being violated as well. There's a great organization called Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. Type in CSPOA.org, and that address again, CSPOA.org. And even the police, there are a handful of good cops out there who recognize that our constitutional rights are being violated all the time. And there's a few of them that are standing up against the federal government to help protect those. But guys, thanks for your time.
There are very few.
But Jessica, could I put in a request to people listening?
Sure.
Anybody in the greater Kansas City area who knows someone who runs a bookstore, I would love to have my books on the shelf there. It's only on Kindle and Amazon at the moment. And I would like people to have access right there at a local bookstore. My email is dean@drugtruth.net. Send me a message. We'll make it happen.
Awesome. And if you need more information about this show, listeners can call 816-931-5534. You've been listening to The Jaws of Justice as we spoke with author Dean Becker. We could talk for hours on this and probably not run out of topics. To End the War on Drugs, A Guide for Politicians, the Press, and the Public is the title of the book.
Ready? One, two, three. What am I gonna do now? Am I gonna make it? Some way, somehow.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events or a link to our show episode and podcast on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And you can always listen to us live on the KKFI website at www.kkfi.org or at 90.1 FM. My name is Lee Moore, and we thank our engineer, Mike Murphy, host of the Wednesday Morning Buzz. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Tell Somebody with Tom Clamor on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m. followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is the Beautician's Blues with Luscious Lynn, and at noon, the Arts Magazine with Michael Ho. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day with the spicy Latin sounds.
It's the 420 Drug War News. Last weekend, I went to the first meeting of Republicans against marijuana prohibition. One of the speakers was Talia Michelle. She was so powerful. Here's her fourth segment this week.
Believe when we have enough mommies and enough pastors contacting the legislators, that we've got a chance at doing something next year, mighty big. But, yes, I am with you. CBD only is not enough. And that's the danger, because there's 15 states right now ready to flip CBD only. It's not good enough. It's not good enough for those post-traumatic stress disorder vets and the AIDS patients and the children with cancer who need THC, because there is science out there that proves THC stops and kills cancer cells. We don't want those people forgotten. It's easy to look at a child with seizures and get dramatic about it and watch Sanjay Gupta and say, CBD, 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 and I love CBD. God knows it's what's helping most of my population. But there are many others. Medicinal marijuana is not about CBD only. I'm so grateful to you all. I don't know a whole lot about decrim. I learned so much listening to the judge talk just now. But I do know that I have mothers that are in danger of getting into that system because they're trying to help their children, and that's not okay. And I may be one of those mothers pretty soon. I don't know. There is a hemp CBD oil that is very similar to Charlotte's Web but is legal, called RSHO. It's in high demand right now. It doesn't have the terpenes, but you can supplement that with essential oils. It does help a lot of kids. My son is using it now. It is legal. And I'll tell you, seeing my kid go from aggressive to calm, being able to sit and watch a TV show, whew, I want to try the real stuff. I really do. And God bless America. I think we can do it. So if there's anything that Amy or I can do to help support this cause, if there's anything our special needs moms can do to support this cause, we want to be part of it. We want to help, and we want to help the decrim section, too, because we don't want our mamas getting caught in all that and being taken away from their children because they were trying to help them not bite themselves anymore or hurt their sisters or trying to keep them out of an institution. I'm just a mom. But there is one straight course, and that is to seek truth and pursue it steadily, and I'm going to steadily pursue the truth on this issue, and I'm not going to give up.
If you would like to contact Talia Michelle, just go to Facebook, Mama Warrior. Again, Talia was just one of many there at RAMP speaking against this prohibition. Dean Becker, DrugTruth.net.